Today's episode is sponsored by Morgan Stanley. Just 30 years ago, renewable energy seemed futuristic. Now, it's a practical way to power cities. Morgan Stanley explores the economics driving the industry and what it means for investors. Hear the full podcast at morganstanley.com/podcast. Morgan Stanley & Co., LLC, member SIPC.
Opening bell in about 20 seconds. Let me just set the stage for you.
Money, money, I want more money.
You cannot have it all.
This whole system is too confusing.
Hi, I'm Ben White, and this is Politico Money. Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Politico Money Podcast. Thanks so much for joining us. This is part two of our series on infrastructure. I'm joined by Senator Jim Inhofe, Republican of Oklahoma, who is chair of a key subcommittee that would oversee any infrastructure package. So we talked to him about what he'd like to see in an infrastructure bill, what he hopes President Trump will talk about in the State of the Union, and his desire that the administration come forth very soon with an infrastructure proposal, a formal one. We also talk about his history as an aviator who's got over 11,000 flight hours and who has flown around the globe. So we get into those issues as well as his feelings on the shutdown, immigration, the environment, a whole bunch of interesting stuff with Jim Inhofe. So I hope you enjoy that conversation. And if you are enjoying the podcast, please do subscribe on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast platform. Rate us and write a written review. Without further ado, let's get to my conversation with Senator Jim Inhofe. Senator James Inhofe, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. You're joining us the day our great national nightmare is over and the shutdown has come to an end. It seems to me this was sort of the most kind of useless and non-productive, not that ever any shutdown's ever productive, but this one didn't seem to really accomplish anything. Like, what did you make of Democrats kind of shutting down the government, and did they get anything out of it?
Well, yeah, let me tell you, this you're asking the right person, because I have been in every one of these shutdowns since 1987. And when I first came to the House, I was there 8 years before coming to the Senate. And this is the first time, I said this on the Senate floor, not in a derogatory sense at all. I said, this is the first time when there can be no doubt as to who caused it, because there is a specific vote that took place where you had 90% of the Democrats and 90% of the Republicans. And any time the New York Times come out and says it's the Democrats' fault, you know it's the Democrats' fault.
Well, let's talk about the shutdown and what impact it might have on infrastructure legislation and the ability of Congress to agree on an infrastructure deal. Now, it seems to me that immigration debate is going to take up a lot of the bandwidth in Congress for the next few weeks and maybe a couple of months. And there doesn't seem to be a lot of, you know, bipartisan good feelings right now and a lot of incentive on either side to move forward on an infrastructure package that would have to be bipartisan. So why should I be confident that you guys can get something done on infrastructure, even though everybody agrees we need to update so much of America's infrastructure?
We have a plan that the president has articulated, and he's been very good about meeting with those of us. I think you know that I do chair the subcommittee on transportation in the Senate, and we've already had three committee hearings. So we've been on a running start for a long period of time. We've had infrastructure hearings. We've had hearings that are looking at energy and other things. A lot of people think of infrastructure as just roads, highways, and bridges, but we're talking about all infrastructure. And so when the president talks about the $1 trillion, in reality, you're talking about $200 billion. And then he has outlined ways that he can leverage that to get other money to the table. Now, some of my real good friends in the two committees that were dealing with this, let's keep in mind there are two committees. It's Environment, Public Works, but also the Commerce Committee, and they have different parts of this. And they all know that it's going to be something that is obviously a big thing, but it's also the big thing that everyone agrees with. So he has ideas on leveraging that I think will actually work. And I feel confident that he's going to stay hooked on this thing And we have Democrats. I've already been meeting with one thing about the committee that I chaired for so many years, Environment and Public Works, we have the most liberal Democrats and the most conservative Republicans. And yet, while I was the chairman and Barbara Boxer was ranking member, then that changed back and forth. During those years, we accomplished things that nobody else did accomplish. I'm talking about, yes, the FAST Act, we all know about that. We also know about all the other things that we did, the chemical bill, the water bill that we did. These are all huge bills. In fact, I can remember when we'd have our hearing at the at noon with the leadership of the Republican leadership, and they'd all talk about the committees that they chaired and what they're doing. And they'd come around to me and I'd say, now from the committee that actually does things. And of course, no one can really disagree with that.
Right.
So we're going to be very busy doing that. We know what we're in the middle of now. We know the problems in terms of funding, and I'd be glad to talk about anything that you have.
Yeah, well, let's. I want to back up in a minute and give people a bigger picture of Jim Inhofe and your aviation exploits and all those things. But since you brought up the funding, let's just talk about that for a second, because as you and I were discussing, there's a leaked document out now that purports to be a kind of an outline of the White House proposal. We haven't seen an infrastructure proposal from the White House yet. We're told to expect it either late this month, early next month. Obviously, there have been some other things taking up bandwidth from President Trump and the White House, but they haven't disputed the basic outlines that are in this leaked plan. And there's no dollar figure in there. There is generally this accepted idea that the White House will propose spending $200 billion in federal dollars and leverage that to $800 billion more in state, local, and private funding to get you to that $1 trillion figure in overall infrastructure spending. First of all, do you think that is the number that they will eventually propose, even though it's not in this document, that they are going to say we need to spend, the federal government needs to spend $200 billion?
I think the answer is yes. Let me just mention, this document that you refer to, really, Ben, there's not a lot of difference in that and everything else we've been talking about now for the last year. He talks about the transformative projects, the incentives, the grants.
Well, let's just talk about the numbers for a second. I mean, we had Senator Carper on here recently to present the Democratic side on infrastructure and how that might work. And, you know, he looked at that $200 billion figure and the idea of leveraging it to $1 trillion and said it just was basically fantasy, that it couldn't happen, that it was way too small of a number of the federal share. And his point was that, generally speaking, when he was governor of Delaware, you had, 80% coming from the federal government, 20% from the state for roads projects. And to flip that on its head and to go 20% from federal, 80% from, let's say, private / state and local was just, you know, impossible. And that Democrats would never agree to that kind of a split. So aren't we sort of Mars Venus here on how Democrats view the federal role in infrastructure versus the Trump White House and Republicans, that it's kind of an unbridgeable gap?
No, I don't think so, Ben, but keep in mind, it's another gap because it's Democrat versus Republican. And I've never seen in the years I've been here a Democrat approach to a problem that didn't concentrate on just the federal spending. And so he and I have had this discussion several times, and he is out front wanting to raise the tax. Quite frankly, if we had indexed the highway tax when it was first started, we wouldn't be even talking about this now. That would be a reasonable thing to do. However, now it's going to be more difficult to do because a lot of people are painted into the corner. They want to be more creative. So what are we looking at now? We're looking at things that the president can do. And let's face it, this is a different, you could interpret this statement any way you want, but he's a different kind of president than we've ever had because he has a different background in putting things together. And so I want to give him every benefit of what we can do to see what we can do to. Well, I thought another thing that might be of interest to people. When we passed the tax bill, one of the things that we learned back in the Kennedy days and in the Reagan days is when you lower marginal rates, it has the effect of increasing government available funds to the government. Now, that's happened. Nobody likes to talk about that. Democrats and don't like to believe it's true, but it is true. And I can remember. In fact, I go from the memory on these. back in 1981. The total amount of money it took to run government was $469 billion. Well, as a result of that tax, which lowered the rates, the big rate down from 70% to 50% and all other comparable rates, we increased from that our amount of money that came in from $469 billion to $750 billion. So there's going to be more money that will be coming in. I know a lot of people don't believe it, but I honestly believe it's true.
Yeah. You mentioned the gas tax, and it's not in this leaked proposal from the White House. They've indicated openness in the past. Certainly, Gary Cohn has, I think others in the White House have, to the idea of an increased gas tax, which hasn't been raised in 25 years, to help fund infrastructure. Is that something you could support?
No, I want to try some of the more creative ways of doing it than the gas tax.
Okay, and what about, so on the gas tax, there's also, what was interesting to me in this leaked document that they refer to the use of private activity bonds, which, initially in the House version of the tax reform bill would have been eliminated. And even the final package seemed to sort of push in the opposite direction of utilizing private activity bonds to help fund these things. Doesn't that seem sort of out of step to you that on the one hand, the tax cut bill kind of pushed against using private activity bonds, but now they're specifically talking about using them as a funding mechanism?
Well, except for the increase in the gas tax, I think our president's made it very, very clear that everything's on the table, that we will try everything. Now, I have to agree that I'm a little frustrated, Ben, because I'd like to, by this time, know a little bit more about some of these things that are not resolved yet. Unfortunately, with the activity of this past weekend, that is going to perhaps delay it even a little bit further. But I have had meetings in the White House. I have heard them talk about parameters. In fact, a lot of the people that are involved in the White House, I knew from way back years ago from previous administrations. And they are decided. In fact, I think while he made the statement that the gas tax is not something that he is pushing, still, I have a feeling that's still on the table. And I think whatever it takes to get this thing done, we're going to get it done. And all due to the popularity, getting back to the example I used about, and I have two very conservative Republicans who thought they were going to be president of the United States, and they were talking about all of these things. Until they got home, they said, well, what about transportation? Oh, I wasn't talking about transportation. That is kind of the golden cow. That's the thing that everybody wants to do. That's the thing. And if you go back and look at the Constitution. This is really what we're supposed to be doing here, defending America, and then they called them post-roads back then, but that's why it's so popular. So everything is on the table. Well, I would say that I don't think that's going to work on just increasing the gas tax because there are too many people who have been opposed to that and are not going to support, it very likely would not support a bill if that's a major part of it.
Okay. And then explain to me how this leveraging formula would work. Say you have the states making the determinations on what projects need to be funded and completed, whether it be, a port or a bridge or whatever it is. Federal government comes through with, 20 or 30%. How do you get the rest of the money? Is the private sector going to be interested in these kind of projects? Is there enough money at the state level to get to the full funding for the project? I'm just not quite clear on how the funding mechanism will really work.
Now, Ben, if you're not clear, or if you were clear, you might be the only one around who is clear. I have talked to the really good people in the White House, but they are right now not talking about the specifics. If you look at this card, this came out today, and there's nothing new on this card. We've been talking about these things for a long period of time. But there are some things that we have tried that have worked, and some are the tolling, for example, and maybe handling tolling in areas where there is the public support for it. There are some places where it's not. It has not worked as well in Texas as it has in Virginia, for example. But we're going to go to where the things that have worked in the past, and then use the new leverages that will come from the president. And he's talked about private participation. I don't know that. I anticipate that I will know. We've had, as I said, we've already had in our subcommittee on transportation three hearings, and we're trying to get as much done as we can. Then we are going to find out what is going to be successful in terms of working with the private sector. So there's a lot more to come, and we're going to, as soon as we get to this, that's one of the first things on the table. And again, we've talked about this in our meetings in the White House, but we have not talked about specifics that have not been tried before. I would wager to you that we will.
Yeah. Let's talk about, you said you've had these meetings at the White House. I think you were with Secretary Chao recently. Have they given you a firm date? We're going to have our infrastructure proposal to you by X. And when would you like to see it? I mean, it seems like...
I'd like to see it yesterday.
Yeah.
But the problem is the meetings that I've had over there were before this closure problem that we had, which is going to cause us to concentrate on some areas that are moving out in front of transportation or of infrastructure, but not very long. I mean, this is going to be, it may be a couple of 3 weeks is all that'll delay.
Do you think that he'll break any ground in the State of the Union address? I mean, obviously, I would imagine he will talk about wanting to spend some money on infrastructure and improving roads, bridges, highways, ports, all that sort of thing. Do you expect to hear anything new in the State of the Union, either in terms of dollar figures or timing on when he is going to submit to Congress an infrastructure proposal?
I think yes, and I think one of the reasons I expect that is because, and the way he's answering right now, it's natural for anyone who's going to give a State of the Union message to not try to end up with surprises. So being kind of lay a little bit of groundwork like he did with this today, and then come out with a huge emphasis on infrastructure, I think that'll happen. I think it's going to be a major part of his speech, and I'm glad it will be.
We'll be right back with more of my conversation with Senator Jim Inhofe, but first, a word from our sponsor.
A message from Morgan Stanley. Has alternative energy gone mainstream? Alternative energy, solar power investment, and utilities are taking what was on the fringes of science as recently as 30 years ago and turning it into the new normal. Biosphere 2, a massive science facility tucked away in the desert foothills of the Santa Catalina Mountains, was built for controversial space exploration experiments. Now it functions as a mainstream research facility, studying the potential for farming beneath solar panels, a technique that's already applicable for future colonies on Mars. Morgan Stanley's podcast discusses where the renewable energy industry has been, its transformation over the past few decades, and what it means for investors in renewable energy technology, as well as everyday consumers. Hear the full podcast at morganstanley.com/podcast and subscribe to the Morgan Stanley Ideas podcast. Morgan Stanley & Co., LLC, member SIPC.
Let's talk about President Trump more broadly. I mean, obviously, you're from a state he carried very handily. What is your relationship like with him? Have you sat down with him? Have you spent time with him? What's your relationship like with the president?
Well, I'm going to share with you something, something that happened a year ago, the 9th of October. I got a phone call from Trump. Now, I hardly knew the guy. He was the nominee of our party. We'd had one meeting with other senators. Never had a personal conversation with him, but I got a phone call. He said, would you come tomorrow to New York and talk about what we're going to be doing? I said, yeah, I'm not doing anything. And so I went up there, and I was so pleased, Ben, to find that there were 14 people, I think there are 14, up there around a table. Each one was an area of specialty. We had someone down there for energy, someone for healthcare. I was there for military, and I think that probably was because Jeff Sessions was probably in on that decision, and he knows of my interest in so we all talked, and this was not the Trump that I had known about or heard about. He didn't say very much. He sat back and listened, and he actually was taking notes. Then he started asking questions about on all of these areas especially. Now, I bring that up because we got into a discussion at that on transportation also. And I think one reason, because those are the two areas that I have been, you know, chairman in the past and have worked on. And I could tell he had a real intense interest. But I guess what I'm trying to get across is he was a guy who had never been in government before. He had a lot of learning to do, and he was busy doing it, and he was depending on what I consider to be the right people to ask questions. And certainly very prominent in that discussion was the need to get heavy into transportation.
Mm-hmm. And what do you, how have you assessed his first year in office, particularly all of the tweeting, all of the controversy, when he tweets about having a bigger nuclear button than Kim Jong-un, and when he's railing against the fake news? And do you think that stuff is helpful to his ability to govern or detrimental to it?
Well, the example that you used, I think, in fact, quite frankly, I think it was helpful. You have a guy, Kim Jong-un, who's he now demonstrated to us on the 28th of November that he can range a city in continental United States, not Alaska, not just Hawaii or something like that, but his range now can reach anywhere. Now, they argue on the other side he can't do it with that much accuracy, but if you can hit anything in a major, in an area of major cities, just imagine the devastation there could be. And then when a direct threat came to him, and he talked about, I now have shown that I have the weapon, I can reach you, I have the button, and I can press the button. And when he came back, I think his way of responding, when he said, yeah, I've got a button, it's a bigger button, we have the technology that we can be specific, and I'm going to use it and wipe you out, or whatever those words were. Well, immediately the next day, you had Kim Jong-un going to South Korea, working out a deal where they're going to be with them in the Winter Olympics, working out things, ways they can work together on things. And, things like that are actually working. Then I watched him on the overregulation. You know, I've been a stickler on this for a long period of time. And I know I'm more conservative than most people you talk to. But we had... One of the biggest problems we had during the Obama administration was all of the regulations that were anti-business regulations. I have a whole list of them here. There are 71 of them. And I used that. Thank you. This is the list.
And amazing that you had that handy.
Yeah. And so we looked at that. And we saw things that needed to be done to open up our economy and get people to start hiring again. And it's working. For example, it happens to be that the first bill that I had after immediately after he took office was a bill that was a Congressional Review Act. There are two ways of killing overregulation. One is executive orders, and the other is Congressional Review Act. One of the regulations that Obama had was that if any domestic oil or gas companies, when they were competing with someone, for example, China, they had to give them their whole playbook on how they calculated, which put us in America at a decided disadvantage. So I introduced a bill, passed the bill, and the first signing ceremony that President Trump had was my bill to stop that particular. But now, I could go through all these things that he's done, but they have worked. As a result, we have the economy is... It's shocking everyone as to what is happening right now. A lot of people don't think it's going to last. I think it will, and I think right now the count is up to 71 of these bills that's being addressed, and all of these you can say have a negative impact on jobs. And look what's happening with jobs right now. So, I just think he was the right guy to come along at this time.
So you don't have a problem with his general approach to Twitter. What about the fake news awards, the constant attacks on the media, the fact that, you now have a porn star out there saying she had an affair with him and was paid $130,000, the Russia investigation? Like, is there anything you don't like about the Trump administration?
Well, yeah, all those things that you mentioned were not good. But then if you look and... It wasn't that long ago that we had Bill Clinton in the White House, and we had a lot more accusations of this type of thing with Bill Clinton. Somehow, nobody thinks that that was so bad. So, I'm a little more tolerant.
He did get impeached,
people.
To be fair. I mean, he was impeached and tried in the Senate. So I think some people thought they were bad things.
Well, of course, a big difference there is, let's assume that there are problems in both camps. That wasn't when he was actually, all the things with or almost everything that Clinton had done was using his office as governor or president or something else in order to satisfy his needs.
Fair enough. Okay, let's back up and talk about your experience as an aviator. I didn't know this, that you have over 11,000 flight hours, and you're the only member of the Senate who's flown an airplane around the world. So,
At his own expense, you mean?
At his own expense. Oh, right. Sure. You, plenty of people have flown around the world in Codels on government jets, but at your own expense. So when did you get into flying?
Oh, God, 60 years, that's 60, 60 years ago. Now, at that time, and this always surprises people, you can get a pilot's license for $32. It costs $4 an hour for 8 hours, and that is gas, airplane, instructor. And so in 95% of people who get pilot's licenses, they can't use them. I've been really blessed in everything. I've been a builder and developer. I've traveled all around. I've used this, and I use it. Everybody knows that when I get home on Thursday night, I'm wheels up about 6 o'clock in the morning. And Oklahoma is a pretty good sized state. We have most of our military installations are in the perimeter, so it takes a lot of time to get around there. And so, I use it and enjoy it.
Yep. You know. So, and how many stops do you make on a flight like that?
Well, on that one, because of the problem in Russia, nobody believed it was a doggy old Cessna 414 airplane, but nobody believed that anyone could own it and fly it. So I was stopped for several overnights in hotels.
It sounds like a euphemism to me.
Yeah, it was. And so it was hard to do. Actually, there was they required a Russian to go along to supposedly be a guide and know the way, but it was to make sure that I didn't go someplace I wasn't supposed to go.
You had a Russian minder, and that's right. And what you're saying is that you were actually in the gulag.
Yeah, and I'm saying that there were some places I would have gone had he not been there.
I would imagine so, but that's a little.
But I have to say this: going across Siberia was probably 8 days, and all the rest of it together was 3 days. So that was a long. I've never tasted better food than I got at Nome, Alaska, after crossing the Bering Strait and getting rid of that slop that they eat in Siberia.
Very nice. Let me ask you, you get obviously criticized a ton by environmental groups, and we're getting away from infrastructure, but I know people wonder why I didn't ask you about this, you know, for famously questioning climate science and the idea of man-made climate change and global warming. Have your views changed on that at all? I didn't get a chance to go back and look at anything you've said about it recently. Are you still...
No. Here's the time. First of all, the science is not settled, but I know that all the science is around one group, the IPCC, which is the United Nations. And if you had read my book, you wouldn't ask me that question. But
apologies.
What they, in fact, I won't either. When we addressed this thing, it was initially, this whole thing started out, we all know this, most people know it anyway, way back when Kyoto started, all these things. It was an effort on global warming for the United Nations to have a vehicle by which they would not be reliant upon all the countries, and they needed a private source of funding. Now, this is a long time ago when this happened. But the scientists that are there, you think about several of the scientists that really kind of laugh about this, and when they found out it wasn't working on global warming, it was a stroke of genius for them to say, well, let's don't worry about global warming, let's call it climate change, because, in fact, climate is changing. Climate always has changed. Every documented, every science, the scriptures, everybody knows that climate is changing. So, in fact, I even joined somebody on the floor of the Senate, and we passed it unanimously, the idea that climate is always changing. Now, the big issue is global warming caused by anthropogenic gases? And that is where the science is not not real. And also, we've gone through periods. For example, since 1895, many periods of warming and being cold, the time when we had the greatest amount of cooling was in 1945. Everyone agrees with that. And that was right after the war. And that was when we had more activity of greenhouse gases than at any other time. It did not precipitate a warming period. It precipitated a cold period. So all these things are out there, and I know that what they want to believe is the world's coming to an end, and it's because of global warming, and that's because of man-made gases. I don't believe it.
You don't believe it. All right, I'm going to let you go, but I want you to give me a kind of a prediction, a prognostication for when there's going to be an infrastructure bill in Congress. When's it going to get passed, and when is it going to get signed into law?
I believe that it's going to, if you had asked this a week ago, I wouldn't say this. It would be earlier. But I think we're going to have the bill by spring of this year. And I'm talking about a bill in the House and a bill in the Senate, and something that is going to be something that the president wants to sign. So I think we're going to have a happy spring in time for summer vacation.
Okay. And you think Democrats will come on board and you'll have 60 votes in the Senate?
Yeah. You know, we've done this before. It wasn't easy to do the FAST Act, and I had to go to the Democrats first. You know, at that time, I chaired this committee, and I talked to many of them, and they equally said, and I've already done it again for this year, and I'm talking about White House and you know, some of the others, Cory Booker and some of the other very moderate individuals, and they are anxious to do this. We are in full agreement on a lot of elements. We're in agreement on what types of infrastructure need to be addressed first, and those discussions are taking place. As I say, we've already had three hearings on it, so I think that by spring of this coming year, we ought to have a bill in place.
Very good. Senator Jim Inhofe promises for all of our summer vacations, we get a infrastructure bill out of Congress. We'll have you back on to see if that actually happens. Senator, thank you so much for taking the time to join Politico Money.
You bet. Thank you.
Take care. That's a wrap on the latest edition of the Politico Money podcast. Thanks so much for joining us. Thank you to Senator Jim Inhofe. Thanks to my producers, Bridget Mulcahy and Micaela Rodriguez. If you're enjoying the show, please do subscribe on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast platform. Rate us and write a written review, and we'll be back with you next week.